Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everybody. This is Kevin Boylo, co-host at Epis Radio. It's April 12th, 10 o'clock in the morning. Today, Nazarita Goldhammer and I, she's in the studio as well, are going to be discussing more content concerning predatory capitalism and new meaning structures. What is a meaning structure? Well, we know a little bit about predatory capitalism. You know, it's really not something that people think about too much. They just think about their immediate pain, their immediate suffering. People with money don't think about it because they're fine. And they actually believe that everything is sort of fine. They have a little bit of a consciousness that maybe some people are struggling a little bit. But based on the interviews I've done, people who are financially comfortable, they live in a bubble, and they don't really understand what it's like to not have any money or to not have enough money to pay the rent, to buy groceries, to pay for the medication, to pay for things that their children need in school. And part of predatory capitalism just includes that social deception. They really don't know. And the people who struggle come across as aggressive, when in reality, they're just desperate. They're frustrated. Their lives are not working very well. And that is the capitalist system. There are winners and there are losers. It is a win-lose dynamic. That's what it is. And some influential economists and politicians have made a lot of people believe that trickle-down economics is the best possible form of economics in a democracy, in a democratic republic. They've duped everybody. But the fact is, it doesn't work that way. What happens is that the people on the top continue to accumulate more and more money, huge money, money that is saved in real estate, blue chip stocks, super safe treasury bonds that are guaranteed by the U.S. government, enormous amounts of money, layers and layers and tiers of money. And then everybody else is living paycheck to paycheck. You know, with little to no ability to save money and little to no ability to buy health care insurance and little to no ability to eat well. Eating well is not inexpensive. And I'm not talking about going out to dinner. I'm talking about buying really healthy food. It costs money to buy organic and to buy a water filter. If you're living below the poverty level, you are not going to go out and buy a Berkey water filter. You're not. You're not going to buy water filters for your shower because they're luxury items. They're for people who are affluent. There's only so much money to go around. And this is you have to really open your mind to what predatory capitalism means. It means there's a predator, and it means there's prey. It means there's an aggressive, violent structure that hurts some people so that other people have too much. Capitalism has always been that way. And now the secret's out. And so clever people with a few extra bucks are trying to make everybody else believe that that's just not true. All kinds of, even academics and intellectuals, try to make other people think that things are not that bad. Things are that bad. And predatory capitalism, remember, is an economic system. Yes, it's full of agency, but it's also a structure. And the structure itself has no mental agency. and no moral agency. It's just an algorithm. It just works. And so that portion of the system doesn't have any intentional structure. It has no moral structure. So you can't really talk to it. The best you can do is to talk to moral agents who live within that structure. So meaning structures are how we understand our world. They're social, they're cultural. They're words that we use, they're languages that we use that include claims to truth. In other words, what's true and what's false, like how we understand reality. And critical theory shows us that those meaning structures are often fabricated or distorted, or they're tendentious in such a way to induce people to continue buying into it. I mean, otherwise, why would people continue to live a suffering life? There's, and you can start analyzing the discourse. Right now, we have a huge problem with police violence against black people, and especially black men. There's a meaning structure. And there's a really strong part of the discourse that suggests that black men are at fault in some way. They violated the law. They have a ticket. They have an arrest warrant. They blew a stoplight. They were speeding. In other words, that they were doing something illegal, and that they were a perpetrator. And therefore, they drew themselves into the encounter that killed them. When in reality, that's false. The structure itself creates those opportunities for violence. That's part of predatory capitalism. If you're a black guy, you got a family, you're trying to feed them, and you get a ticket that's expensive, it's really hard to pay the ticket and pay for the kids' food. In a lot of cases, yes, it's true for white folk as well. But the hypothetical question you ought to ask is, are black people disadvantage more than white people in that kind of structure? It's part of predatory capitalism. It has all kinds of derivatives in the law, healthcare, education. It's there. We have the stats and the facts. Predatory capitalism also destroys ecosystems. Rainforests. Its sole algorithm is to do whatever needs to be done to produce profit and revenue for capitalists. That's what it is. That's what capitalism does. It means buying up land, deforesting it, building plants of various kinds that create toxic poison, paying off the people who live in the city, paying a few fines now and then, but continuing their nefarious ways. It's the same thing in, so we're talking about race, we're talking about land and water, we're talking about various genders, which is highly related to race. We have the white privileged patriarchy setting the rules. And women have had to fight their way for decades and centuries to get a fair shake. And we're still not there. We're still not equal. There's a lack of justice. But predatory capitalism is very clever. It's smarter than you are. Predatory capitalism is a really clever algorithm that will do anything in its power to make money for the owners of production. We're seeing it with the oceans right now. The loss of marine life, marine habitat, It's right there. The evidence is not false. It's there. And yet, the structure and discourse of predatory capitalism puts that at issue, makes it a debate. And then we have legislative committees. We have scientific committees that are commissioned by industry. And we have years and years and years of false debate about topics that are obvious. That's a product of predatory capitalism. Predatory capitalism will fight you and fight you and fight you. The tobacco industry, this is an example everybody can understand. The CEOs of the tobacco companies, and it's all over, we have tapes of them, were testifying before Congress, and they all said that tobacco, according to their understanding, was not harmful. But we know that that's false, just like extremely false. So new meaning structures means the attempt to engage in polemic, engage in rational debate. And it is a debate. It is a debate. It's dialectic. It means that new meaning structures rise up. They present themselves, and we say, look at these new meaning structures. Wouldn't they be better for everybody, better than predatory capitalist meaning structures? But they're subjugated right now. The haves, people with a lot of extra money, they don't want change. Or even if they, but they know it needs to happen, right? This is the thing. So you have the titans of industry who are billionaires saying, and this is how nefarious it is, yes, we need more taxation on the super rich. So it sounds good, but nothing happens. Why is that? Predatory capitalism. It's a really strong algorithm. So the point I'm trying to make is that capitalism in its very essence subjugates some for the benefit of the other. It creates winners and losers, and it's very logic. This is the problem with capitalism. And there are all sorts of idiots who are what I would call the complacent bourgeoisie, who have the really nice house, the great health care, the vacations, the big fat bank account, the big fat retirement account, the big fat income. Their kids go to really nice schools. They golf. That's the life of leisure. And they're insulated. That's called an alienated, insular self-structure. And yes, they assuage their guilt by tithing, either tithing to the church or tithing to organizations at the end of the year with their little $20 check or their $50 check or their $500 check. It doesn't matter. Because the structure itself is predatory. And in fact, paying that money at the end of the year keeps the system going. You should know that. So a new meaning structure says, whoa, let's rethink the design of our economics. Let's rethink the design of our economic flow, of our socioeconomic system, of tract housing, of apartment projects, thinking the design up from ground zero. And you'll hear politicians make the argument that it would be too expensive to do that. This is why President Biden is running into trouble with his infrastructure overhaul, $2 trillion. It's got some good points in it, but without getting into those points, let me just say it's a large global type of revolution that he's aiming for here, at least at one level. He's not talking about overcoming capitalism. But within capitalism, he's trying to make the big play, right? It's the quarterback throwing the long ball 50 yards to the receiver who catches it and scores a great touchdown. That's what he's trying to do. But it doesn't go far enough. Because we still have predatory capitalism. The capitalism is an algorithm. and it will continue to find ways to outsmart you. If you're not the one in power with all the money, it will outsmart you. Challenge is for the outside intellectual to develop a theory about new meaning structures and a way to implement them in a way that's efficacious, to get a toehold. Otherwise, we are absolutely bound for disaster. Again, the capitalist bourgeoisie will laugh at that because they're insulated. Nazarita, welcome to the show. We'd like to hear your comments about predatory capitalism and the possibility of new meaning structures. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. You know, when you first brought out the idea of, you know, when you're wealthy, you're very insulated. You're insulated from the hardcore everyday life problems that we experience in actually the predatory capitalist system. And I think of it like this. I think of it like if you're in a harsh winter and you have a really heavy-duty coat and you have big boots and you have insulated gloves and pocket warmers and a hat and everything keeps you warm, you can express some sympathy, I'm using that word instead of empathy, sympathy for those who do not have a coat or shoes or hat or gloves or heat warmers for your feet and hands. You can express sympathy, but that sympathy is different than empathy. It says, you know, I'm really glad I have what I have. I really wish you had more. But what that sympathy is instead of empathy is it says I'm not willing to actually share with you. I'm gonna say these words that mean that I feel for you in a certain level that you don't have what I have, but I'm not willing to give up anything I have to help you. So that's really the heart of predatory capitalism. So I'd like to tackle
it. Let me ask you a question. People often talk about their affluence as if it were a blessing. They say, our family's so blessed, and because we're so blessed, we're going to write an extra large check to the church this month. We're so blessed. But don't you think, and this is the question, don't you think that is a ruse to somehow try to make the struggling people believe that the affluent people deserve it? They somehow deserve it, that they've worked hard for it, that they're better, that they work harder, and that by implication, the people who don't have enough to eat deserve it. Don't you think that is the ruse that capitalism tries to make people believe?
Well, I guess you answered your own question on that because that's true. But where does it really come from? And we've been delving into something really deep. And what that deepness is that what are we as humans? What is our purpose here besides what we have exhibited before, which is on the most devastating side of human ingenuity, is the extreme violence and corruption that humans are capable of. And on the other side is this invention in this muse, this creativity to do things that are helpful. And so when I look at money, here's what I think of. Money is an energy. There's always been an energy that has been devoted to exchange so that some humans can get more throughout history. It was beads. It was, you know, buttons. It was, you know, cattle. It was food. We've always had a system in place where those that had more would barter to get more, and those that had less always wanted more. So this isn't like a new system, but what it is it's translated and it's taken over through a form of energy that doesn't have value in itself. If the world came crashing down tomorrow, And it very well could. All someone has to do is actually unplug the electricity and poison the water, and that would be the end of civilization as we really know it. So if you look at money, money has no value in itself. It's just all these commodification pieces that we use to get something that gives us more power and more structure over someone else. Because we haven't really looked at our violent nature and why we want to be better than someone else. Why do we? So if we look at money as an energy, we say, why are we letting, and because this is really true, why do we admire people who take this worthless pieces of paper, worthless bank accounts in reality, because they can't feed you? If the stock market crashes, you will not have bread from the money in your bank. You will not have it. What you will have is nothing. You might have, you know, you might take a whole truckload of money like they used to buy a piece of bread. But in essence, money holds our energy. It holds our hopes, our dreams, our energy, our quest for dominance over other people, to have more, to make a win-lose situation in the world. That's what money is. It holds that energy. It doesn't hold we're all equal, we want everybody to have peace, love, and harmony. It doesn't hold that energy. It holds a different energy. And yet, when people die, some of their biggest regrets are is they did not fund, they did not give money to those that needed it. They didn't share. They didn't open their heart to give freely. They were penurious with their energy and their money. And so it comes down to something that I believe is different. It comes down to what are we custodians of in ourselves? What are we shepherds of in the world? You can take education. People are against the government forgiving student debt. And yet in the rest of the world, education is free, because if you have smart people, they can create and use their inspiration to do better things to help the world. So if you have predatory capitalism that says education is such a high cost that over 50% of your population doesn't become educated, what are you really doing? What you're saying is we want a working class that is very close in subjugation to slaves so that the wealthy can use that energy to live better. And who are at fault in this system? We all are. We all are at fault in the system, because the energy in the form of money that wealthy people have acquired through means sometimes not of their own most of the time, what that means, even though our view of money says they must have done something good to earn that money, that's what the general view is. If you really look at yourself and you think, what do you think of money? You think, I must have done something good. I'm lucky. I'm doing the right thing. I'm blessed. All these things that we have put a meaning on money that is false. Because money is an energy. And those that buy into desire for more, desire for accumulating, we are just the problem as the people who have the money and are accumulating. We're the same. One desires what the other one has, the other gets more, and the one that desires what has more desire. And so we have created this system together. It is not the rich that have created the system. We have created it together through our complacency, our implicit in desire, in wanting to have a certain meaning on a substance that has no meaning. They put this meaning onto it. So when we talk about meaning, we have to say the meaning of money by itself is nothing. If you were on Mars and you brought all these $100 million bills, it would be meaningless, because money in itself is meaningless. But we create and put meaning onto this substance so that we can create a dominant system. We can create the system that we have. It's somebody wrote a book called Caste, and that's exactly what we have. We have a caste system, and we play into the caste system through education, through the way that we live, the way that we let, that we have to acknowledge this, the way that we let big companies get away with using their energy to not only dominate but poison most of us. Them do it because we want to believe in some foolish way that they, by some divine right, will do good by us if we subjugate ourselves to their will. So we have to look at that structure in ourselves, right?
Yeah.
So that's the big meaning question. The big meaning question is, one, why do we give such meaning to places around the world that are filled with wealth, and why do we give less meaning to places that are natural that we want to tear down to create more wealth? And why do we let big business pollute our environment and pollute us so that they kill us? And why do we let them do it? Why are we letting police kill a population that we live with every day that might have a different skin color? That means nothing. Their blood's the same fucking color. And we have to remember that. Non-humans and humans alike, we have the same blood. We are connected. And if we let someone harm the other, we are harming ourselves. And we have to really look at that deeper meaning. And then we have to take that understanding and we have to change the system to create a new system. Because sometimes you can't change a system by just saying the system has to change. You have to create something that is in direct opposition to that system that people want more. They say, oh, that's better. I want that instead. So that's really what I'm thinking, and I'm thinking of it in myself because I'm in the midst of looking for the ideal place to live, and I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking the rich have it all. I mean, they can get everything they ever wanted, but the buildings that they want are not really conducive to indoor-outdoor incorporating, you know, biophilia and plants and nature. They're not really that. What they are is they're compartmentalized, healing off nature from those that inhabit those places. So it's very easy for them to sell them because they're not really places that are alive with energy. We want places that are alive with energy because we don't want to be stuck in a system where all we do for entertainment is drugs, buying stuff, and procreating. We have to change that. Like, there's more to life. There's energy. There's inspiration. There's creativity. There's empathy. There's giving. There's forgiveness. There's living in harmony in a different way than what people think of as a pacifist. It's just like you're laying yourself on the ground for people to run over you. That's what people think of peacekeepers. So I think that we have to explore, how do we change the meaning of this system that seems to have a stranglehold on life, on our very life? We're struggling because we are dying from the system that we have created and participated in, and we have to change that.
So how do we change it? That's the question. And so I'm focused on the change of meaning structures, which is a hard thing to think about. Most people like would have no idea what that even means. Yeah, it's we're taking on the difficult topics here. You know, and the truth is street activism is not enough. It requires theory, it requires changing laws. Believe it or not, law rules. I'll give you an example. So there was a dog, a Malamute, who was slated for euthanasia in Clackamas County, Oregon. And for the last year, literally dozens of people have worked tirelessly to get this dog out of confinement and into sanctuary. And they were successful. And so this dog, this Malamute, he has to leave his family, and he's going to a 2,000 acre sanctuary in Southern California with seven other dogs. And he's going to have a great life. But the important point is that there's a group of people, including a bunch of animal law attorneys, they're going after the counties to create different options other than the violent option of euthanasia. See, I take it that predatory capitalism has a violent algorithm. It doesn't really care if you're on the street, etc. Just like some laws don't care if certain people get put to death, including Malamutes. But it requires psychological theory, ecosystem theory, animal rights theory, as encapsulated into a new law. New law. New law is new meaning structure. That's the implementation I'm talking about. And they're going after this county, and they're saying, we've got to change the law so that the only option is not euthanasia, so that there can be in the law five options. And, you know, one of them might be sanctuary, and another one might be, you know, escorting a dog all the way across country or out of the country. Or behavioral training, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So this case is a watershed case because it's creating new meaning and new value of a Malamute that was probably teased by a little kid and finally just said, enough, leave me alone. And all the behaviorists say that this dog is not dangerous in any way, shape, or form. So a new meaning structure is, it contains value, it contains how we resolve conflict, it contains, at least by implication, the notion of the good. And so it takes theorists like you and I, Nazarita, to propound these new meaning structures and to articulate them well. And to be able to talk about them with other people, just like we've had extensive discussions lately about the psychologically damaging characteristics of tract housing and box-like apartment housing in America. It hurts you. It hurts bodies. It screws people up socially, psychologically. We create frustration, we create aggression because people don't have enough money. Again, predatory capitalism. They are living too many people to an apartment. There's not enough space. You take the whole not enough space problem. If you have a dog or a cat, there's another issue. But you take a lack of space, there's a lack of privacy, a lack of boundaries. And then on top of that, I don't know if our listeners have ever been into a project housing. I have personally been to project housing as a lawyer because I wanted to see it. And usually a lot of them have guards posted, police posted. Not all of them do, but they're the most stark, concrete-oriented building structures that you can possibly imagine, filled with darkness, despair, and it shapes your mind. Structure and your environmental structure shapes your mind. Again, this is what the brilliance of Marx and Engels. They already knew this. We're not saying something that they didn't know. They knew this. They focused on the economy. The capitalism shapes your mind. Where you are in capitalism shapes your mind. The view of a billionaire, if I sat him down and talked to him or her right now, a very different understanding than somebody who's under the poverty level. The worst offenders are the what I would call the capitalist corporate bourgeoisie, the people who actually work. But there are subtleties and nuances, because they will tell you, well, I deserve all the money I've made. I deserve it. It's morally my money, and I shouldn't have to give it to anybody. But again, that's an unintelligent, totally ignorant perspective. It shows a really small mind space, and it's also egocentric. We're all part of the whole. And so what I'm saying is predatory capitalism divides people. Now, Zarita, this is the point. I think this is where we can really come into commonality here. It divides people. The initial division is winners and losers. Of course, it's more nuanced than that, right? It's a continuum. But you can imagine that people who are doing pretty well, and even academic guys, who have a great office and they have classes and they have esteem and they have a comfortable life and they can get a nice haircut and they're respected, they don't really know what it's like to go to school and live in a car. They don't know what it's like to not have a place to live, to actually be studying out of your car. No place to take a shower unless you bum a shower from a friend. I've known students like that who had no home. I've known really smart PhD teachers who were so backed up with student loans who didn't have a place to live. They literally could not afford an apartment, not even a lower-end apartment. They had to live in a car. And so if you see a professor whose hair doesn't look quite clean, it's possible that that person doesn't really have a place to live. So the challenge is to use your faculty of perception to investigate, you know, where is predatory capitalism working in your life or your place of work or your neighborhood? How does it affect animals, horses, dogs, cats, children? Predatory capitalism right now has completely divided students, depending upon their school district. If you're lucky enough to go to a rich, elite school, you have every resource that money can buy. If you live in a wealthy neighborhood, your school will buy everything that you need. But if your neighborhood is in a poor area, then you lack resources. You might not even be able to get on the internet. You might not be able to do your homework. It's so stacked against the poor right now to get ahead, to go anywhere, to do anything. And then you throw on top of that all the violence that's being perpetrated on women and black people. It's frightening to go anywhere. And the out of control violence towards animals. This is all predatory capitalism. Capitalism rewards violence. Capitalism rewards winning at all costs. And so as we continue to say over and over again, and you've got to get this, all of our listeners, the values of capitalism displace and dislodge all other important human values. It is a false value system, but it gets layered on top of everything else. So if you're fighting for new meaning structures, you might seem like the village idiot or the village genius or the village madman or hysterical in some way. You know, people who fight big pharma all of the dangerous and violent things that healthcare, modern healthcare does to people, or the law, or education. And so whenever you're fighting a whole system, like, it's a tough road. If you're fighting pollution of waterways, it's a tough road. Or anti-fishing campaigns, it's a tough road. And again, the bourgeois complacent, they'll just smile, they'll talk with you politely, and they'll go on and they'll continue indirectly supporting predatory capitalism. They're complacent. They speak out of both sides of their mouth. But I think we're really, I think it's a really tough road here, Nazarita, to create new meaning structures. Now, we can say them. We can write about them. But how can we implement them? I think that's it. Now we're about 3 minutes. If you can give us kind of an outline, maybe of just some more practical ideas about how we can implement new meaning structures, I think that would be really valuable for our listenership. And I will have to catch you off.
Yeah. So I think we should all take a look at the meaning that we have for everything, like the police. If we want to, why do we have police? We have police because we call police to protect our stuff. We call police to protect us against mentally incompetent people, to people who sell drugs, who are trapped. And so the police system is set up that way. So we have to look at what is the meaning. If we're replacing the police, we have to look at why aren't we funding mental health professionals? Why do we not understand homelessness? A lot of homeless people are very sensitive to structures being cooped up in a structure that limits freedom. It isn't that they want to live on the street. They don't want to live in these structures, even though they protect them, that are dead. And we have to look at the meaning behind Down syndrome, autism, all those things that are giving us insights, because I believe at the core of this, our meaning is because we do not know who we are. We are insecure. We do not know our worth. And so we push that on everything else. You are unworthy. You are unworthy. Animals are unworthy. The earth is unworthy because we do not know our own worth. That's what I believe we have to look at.
You know, there's something to that, Nazarita, that we don't know our own worth. There's a lack of sacredness. The thing that's really scary or of deep concern is how easy it is for humans to kill other life forms and how easy it is for humans to kill other humans. I've been meditating a lot lately. What I mean by meditation is I've been contemplating and thinking with all of my being about what it means to kill somebody, to take a life. That could be a dog, could be a horse, a pig, chicken, another human. To take another life. I've been really contemplating. It's serious. It is in some ways the most serious thing of all. To kill another life, to take that person's life. So we will continue next time. This is great, Nazarita. We can talk about that, taking a life next time. Thank you for being here to both Nazarita Goldhammer and myself. Thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back next week. Thank you.